Welcome to the second episode of the On the Record podcast for this semester. Today's TMU Week in Review is focusing on an unfortunate aspect of the return to campus, which is the return to commuting.
Also coming up later, we begin the upper year sessions, where upper year students share their experiences in their respective industries and some tips and words on how you can start your journey in working in the field you've always wanted.
I'm Maya Abramson.
I'm Georgina Parker.
I'm Andrew Yang.
And that's what's coming up on today's TMU Week in Review.
For the majority of TMU students, a return to campus means a return to commuting. A 2019 study led by a TMU professor found that 77% of TMU students take public transit to campus, which is the highest percentage of any university in Ontario. TMU students who take local and regional transit like the TTC and the GO Train system spend an average of 67 minutes getting to campus each day. To learn more, we sat down with the professor who led this transit study. Ruktim Mitra is a director and associate professor in the TMU School of Urban and Regional Planning. He is also co-director of Transform Research Lab.
So, in fall 2019, before the pandemic, you led a large study of student transportation, and the study was called Student Move TO. What did that study tell us about student transportation in the GTHA?
Well, we learned a lot about how university and college students travel in their everyday life, not just to their schools, but students have a life beyond their schools as well. So we were interested in understanding how everyday mobility of young adults, and in this case, university and college students, look like. So the survey and the analysis following that provided us with insights into their everyday life, basically.
And from that study, you looked specifically at different schools. How did you find that TMU students compared to other schools in terms of what their commute was like?
Yeah, I mean, TMU, as you know, it is a commuter school. And what we found is that the majority of our students actually live with their family or parents. And as a result, they have very long commutes, unlike many other schools in this region. We also found that TMU has the highest proportion of students who rely on our regional transit system, the GO Train system, to commute to school more than any other GTS schools that we studied. So the patterns are somewhat different, although we see some similarities with other large schools.
So that was what you saw in 2019. And then in 2020, the pandemic hit. What was public transportation like in Toronto at the height of COVID?
Look, I mean, there are studies that have shown that as much as 80% of GTHA residents who used transit before pandemic stopped using them during the pandemic. So suddenly the public transit was hard hit by the pandemic. And we know the reasons where we were asked to stay two meters away from each other. So public transit naturally was not the most a desirable mode of transportation. But now, as people are going back to work, our students are coming back to schools, we can see public transit usage going up slowly but surely.
And when you released the findings of your study, there was a call for changes to transportation infrastructure in order to ensure that everyone's safety would be looked after as campus activities come back. What kind of changes were you hoping might be implemented?
You know, pandemics like this are major disruptions that gives us an opportunity to rethink the way we plan our transit systems and other aspects of our urban systems. We saw a lot of bike lanes rolling out during the pandemic, for example. Post-pandemic, those could be a great way to make shorter trips for our students. For TMU, for example, many of our students live downtown. With good bicycle transportation network, they can actually use this network now to commute to school safely, avoiding crowds in the transit systems. So I think there is an opportunity to rethink as we, you know, continue to see our economy coming back to pre-pandemic levels. There's an opportunity for us to rethink how the future of GTHA's transportation would look like. And in my opinion, this future transportation system should be a multimodal system where major destinations such as TMU campus are connected by various different ways of transportation, such as good sidewalks, good bicycle network, good transit, and so on and so forth.
Over the pandemic, public transit ridership fell dramatically. Now, as life becomes more normal, people are getting back on transit. This includes TMU students, the vast majority of whom take public transit to campus. We caught up with some TMU students to get their perspective on commuting. Many are frustrated with commute times and transit delays, and some said that they liked not having to commute when they were learning online last year. First, we spoke to Saloni Patel in second-year biomedical science.
Like, in my first year, it was totally online, but in the winter semester, I had to commute from North York, and it was pretty much not good. I used to like the TDC, but it was not that student-friendly because of the delays, and somewhat they kept on doing delays in the timing, and I used to reach late in my labs, like around 30 minutes, and yeah. It was awful.
Saloni has recently moved closer to campus and is much happier about her route to school in the morning.
If I've got a lab from 9 to 12, I just wake up at 8:30 and I'll just reach in like within 5 minutes. I'm just 5 minutes walking distance away from the campus, so it's really good for me.
Next, we talk to MK Cao, another student in biomedical science.
So I commute here. I usually take the 165 or the 36 to the Finch West Station or Wilson Station, and then take the subway here to Dundas. So in terms of if I like it or not, no, it sucks. Sometimes there's some crazy people the subway, and since there's a lot of traffic and a lot of construction going on, it takes like an hour on the bus. I'm not really sure what they can do better because, you know, I'm not really one who plans this stuff, but I think they can definitely add some sort of new routes or something, or perhaps add more security so that the delays on subways don't happen too frequently.
Rabia Arif, a second-year science student, says the lack of commute was easier last year, but she doesn't always mind it.
So I commute from Mississauga, like the Square One area, so I usually just end up taking the GO train up until Union, and then I just take the subway from Union to Dundas Station. Yeah, it's fine, honestly. Like, it was hard to get used to at first, like, and also, like, because if you have, like, 8 or 9 a.m., it just gets so crowded. Like, there was this one time, literally last week, I didn't get a seat, like, to sit the whole 40 minutes on the train, no seat at all. But you got to do what you got to do. I don't think I have an option. So basically, my strategy this year has been just getting done with commuting in the morning. Even if I have class at 4, I try to come at, like, 9 a.m., just get it done with. I don't mind it. Like, I'm neutral about it, but I guess obviously it was easier in the first year.
Javoir Riley is in his third year of the Bachelor of Science and Nursing program. He commutes from the border of Pickering.
Commuting here is ridiculous. I was at the George Brown facility before. It wasn't too bad, and granted, like, this is only about, I guess, 2 kilometers from George Brown, but to take the bus from Union to here is ridiculous. It's too much construction. Roads are closed for like 2 years now. I don't understand why roads have been closed for 2 years now. Construction, I feel like, has been happening for at least 4 years, and they're slowing down the line, they're slowing down the buses, and then we get to class late. And then if you do go the route to driving, it's too expensive. It's just way too expensive, so we just gotta take our loss, regardless of how we're gonna take it.
Javoir says he was nervous to return to campus this year because of how much he dislikes his commute.
I hate it. I loved online school. Like, coming here, I actually had anxiety coming here just because I knew I had to take the transit come here. So it did make it a little bit difficult, especially my first 2 weeks starting school. So it kind of gave me a little bit of, I would say, it helped me back a little bit. I didn't want to come in. I didn't want to come at all, but I have to do it. I have to get my degree.
We talked to Rakti Mitra about people returning to transit and student experiences with delays and construction.
StatsCan reported that in June, Canadian public transit ridership was up to over 60% of pre-pandemic levels in urban areas, So it seems, like you were saying, that ridership is increasing, but quite slowly. Do you think that we know that the pandemic has turned some people away from public transit? Do you think that that is for good, or that people will continue to come back?
Well, pandemic has certainly turned some people away from transit. Now, as we are coming back to work and school, there's an opportunity for us to consider other options now as well. So some people who are some students who were using public transit previously might take advantage of the improved and safer bike lanes that exist closer to the campus now and might switch to bicycles, for example. So that's what I'm referring to. When we have safer, more improved options, then it creates an opportunity for some people to consider these other options. Simply put, if there are more choices, more people would take those choices, and reducing pressure on our already overcrowded public transportation systems post-pandemic.
And what do you think the city can do to incentivize people to go for those other options?
Well, the best thing that a city can do is to, you know, provide these options. You know, we know that improved pedestrian infrastructure and improved bicycle network are always politically contested. Now, during the pandemic, we saw some changes in the ways these projects are implemented. Many kilometers of bike lanes, for example, were implemented very fast. So our hope is that post-pandemic, we would see some changes in the ways these policies are made and debated across decision makers, planners, and engineers. And we hope to see more of these options. But at the same time, when we look at public transportation in itself, the pandemic offered us an opportunity to collect data and study where we have a captive audience for public transit. While transit ridership went down generally, there are areas within the city or within the region where many people continue to use transit, meaning that those people are dependent on transit for the lack of other options presented to them. So now we have the opportunity to review those data, review those ridership data, and prioritize our transit services accordingly so that better transit service is provided in places where people need them most.
And in terms of people who are dependent on the TTC, I find that students often report delays or long wait times or inconvenient routes. Do you think issues like these are inevitable for public transit in a big city, or are there planning issues within the TTC that could be rectified?
I don't think this is an issue that is specific to TTC. You know, Toronto is a large city and our public transportation is overcrowded. So when a system is running close to its capacity or over capacity, small interruptions or disruptions can have a ripple effect, which is what we used to see prior to the pandemic. One bus would break down and that kind of would have a ripple effect on the service. Now, in the short term, we would likely see less of that because our public transit is running less than its capacity. But again, I mean, this creates an opportunity for us where as transit ridership slowly goes up again, TTC and other planning agencies can pay more attention to where these pain points are and, you know, plan services accordingly.
Lights, camera, action. Welcome back to the On the Record podcast. On this week's edition of Upper Year Sessions, we spoke to Josh Kim. Josh is a third-year sport media student at Toronto Metropolitan University. Along with finishing his degree, Josh works as a freelance photographer, journalist, and producer. He is the host of Get Your Head in the Game, a podcast focused on the relationship between sports and mental health. Josh, happy to have you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you guys for having me. Really happy to be here.
So we're just going to start off by asking a few questions about your career and where it all started. So could you tell us where your passion for photography began and what was the spark that, I guess, started everything?
Yeah, I guess it wasn't really much of a spark. It was kind of more of just a gradual process where it was a gradual realization over, you know, a couple months, and that those months turned into years. And back in high school, I really just noticed that we didn't really have anybody doing any creative content work at all in our high school. And I kind of wanted to just be different from all my friends. I think that's like the biggest thing when I always think back to kind of what my origin story is like being different is something I hold really highly just personally. And honestly, when I look back at my days in high school, I think back to all the kids that were trying to do business and science and math and all that stuff. And I kind of realized that stuff wasn't for me. And partly it wasn't for me because I wasn't passionate about it, but also I just wanted to be different than everybody else. So when I found that opening and that niche, I guess you could say, I mean, I kind of took it and ran with it. And because we had no one doing it in our high school, that role kind of fell onto me right out of the gate. So I had a lot of room to work with and grow and improve myself. So yeah, definitely started in high school, and it was really all about being different than everybody.
So beginners in photography sometimes can get like worried or caught up on trying to figure out what the proper equipment or gear to use is. Do you have a stance on like whether you feel that the gear is really important, the types of things that you feel are really necessary when you're producing the content that you do?
This might be a hot take, but I'm going to say gear does not matter at all. Some people think it does, and I think in some capacity it might, because obviously you're not going to shoot Raptors Media Day with like, you know, a power shot from Canon or something like that. But like, at the end of the day, I don't think it matters very much, especially when you're starting out. I think a lot of people, to your point, a lot of people can get caught up in gear and the cost and what you should get and when. Everybody kind of goes at their own pace, and a lot of it has to do with the situation you're put in. If you're just starting out and nobody else in your family knows a thing about photography, obviously it's going to take you a bit longer to accumulate the gear that you need to get to that next level. But then you have the people that enter and want to be passionate about photography and just digital content in general, and then past family members have gear lying around. That is exactly what my situation was. A lot of, like, half the stuff I'm currently using was generously donated to me by family members. So I think for me, I look at that and be like, it really just depends on the situation that people are put in. Obviously, some situations are more favorable than others, but really, I was totally fine using, you know, older equipment, and I still am. Technically speaking, by today's industry standards, my equipment's way older than let's just say, you know, other professionals would be. But I see nothing wrong with that, because if you can still create the results and curate the content that your audience is looking for, and most importantly, the content that you're happy with and the clients that you work with are happy with, then nobody's really going to question what equipment you use. At the end of the day, it's always going to be about what you put on social media and how it looks in a frame.
So speaking of social media, I think it's pretty fair to say that you have quite some eyes on your content. And, you know, we've seen that you've been to some pretty amazing events and games during your time as a photographer. What's your advice on networking your way into, you know, being invited to shoot these events and games?
Networking is a really complicated topic, in my opinion. I think a lot of people try and simplify it when it's something that isn't really that simple. I'm going to be honest, at times it can be very simple. It's really as simple as saying hi to someone and introducing yourself and telling them your aspirations and what you want to do in the industry. But also part of it is patience. Part of it is, you know, waiting for them to answer. Part of it is being professional and learning how to be professional. Part of it is reaching out at the right time and reaching out with the right words and the right questions that you ask. So I guess the overall tip that I would have, or tips, I guess you could say, for networking is just, you have to just be approachable. A lot of the time people get really shy and nervous around new people, especially people that they look up to. In an industry where you're trying to succeed and trying to get to that next level, you really have to treat the people that you look up to like a colleague. And a lot of the time for me, is when I meet new people, I never really think they're above me. I always really think there's all automatically some mutual respect there by default, whether it's someone that I know, whether it's someone that I know mutually, like I follow on Twitter or something. But a lot of the people that I've come to know in networks and stuff are at other events and games and whatnot. And there, when you're just in your element, you really just have to be approachable, and you can't automatically assume there's some talent gap just because they've been doing it longer, or they've been doing way cooler things than you. When you start thinking like that, you kind of miss the point of networking in general. The point of networking in general, at least to me, is helping them, and in turn, they help you. Or you just getting to know someone on a personal level, and that leads to something further down the road. But a lot of the time, people get caught up in how many followers they have or who they've spoken to in their career. And when you think about their accomplishments, like, that takes away from the overall point. You're not trying to get to know them in order to necessarily do or become what they are. You're trying to get to know them first as a person, and then whatever comes next comes next.
So as a student and a working photographer, how do you find it balancing between work and school?
I think there isn't really a golden answer to that. Like, I definitely don't have one. If someone else has one, like, please reach out to me and tell me. I think the first thing I will say is finding out what works for you, because everybody's balance and workload and their capabilities when work gets tough and when school gets stressful, everybody's capabilities and mentality when that comes is very different. I think for me, the biggest thing I've kind of realized is that as long as I have some semblance of social interaction in my life and I can still confidently say that at the end of each month or each week or whatever threshold you want to set for yourself, at the end of that, if you can confidently say that you've done things that you thoroughly enjoy outside of work, that means hanging out with friends, going out for food, going out for drinks, going to sports games, and just taking nights to yourself where you kind of just watch movies or play something and just relax. If you can confidently say that at the end of each threshold session, wherever that may fall, I think that's good balance right there. For me, it's been a back and forth battle, because some days you enter a week and you're like, oh, this is looking like a super chill week for me. And you look at your calendar and there's nothing booked. And then by the end of the Monday, you're like, holy crap, this is going to be one of the craziest weeks of my life. And a lot of the time I find myself doing that, because at the end of each Monday, I find that stuff is just piling on left, right, and center, because you never really know when someone can email you or text you about something. So the balance, the question of balance is really hard for me. And that's been one of the biggest challenges I think I've had in my career is finding that balance. And for me, what works is just unplugging for nights. And I know that can be hard in itself when all your career is on social media, but that's kind of what I've been doing in the past couple of days to just kind of get away from things. And still seeing your friends is really helpful, of course.
So as photographers, I'm going to find some common ground here. I guess it's pretty safe to say we're always looking for the shot. But I also think it's pretty important to focus on the moment that we've lived and, you know, been through. Would you say that there has been a defining moment in your career, whether it was good or bad, that I guess changed your perspective on something, or just helped you to, no pun intended, look through a different lens?
I like that pun. In terms of a defining moment, I don't think there's been a defining moment. I think it's been a collection of defining moments. Off the top of my head, you know, the job that I hold now was a pretty defining moment, because that was about a 2-year-long process about all that coming together, like just getting to TSN and getting to Bardown and getting to work in digital content for a massive network in Canada was always one of my biggest goals in life. And the opportunity arose before the pandemic hit, and I was really looking forward to it. It just never ended up happening right then and there because of the pandemic. So now having all that come full circle 2+ years later, it was definitely, I'd say, one of the more defining moments in my career. But I'm going to be honest with you. I think almost every game that I go to or every sporting event that I go to is a defining moment in my career, because you never know what you're going to see, and you never know who you're going to meet, and you never know what you're going to end up capturing. So obviously there are some highlights that I can throw in there, like Hockey Canada events. Raptors Media Day was obviously a big one, and the Women's Basketball Nationals from Kingston last year. All those moments are truly defining, and honestly I'll never really get tired of them, because like I know they'll just keep end up happening, and you can always look forward to the next defining moment. So I think that you raise a good point about kind of appreciating the spotlight that you're in, and you know, that's been a similar to balance, it's been a challenge to do that sometimes when you're so engulfed in the emotion of the moment and everything that's going on. But I honestly think that once you look forward to each event that you go to, I think that's enough in acknowledging the moment itself.
This might be a bit of a deeper question. What is your why? So why do you do what you do?
Wow, that's a good question. And I don't think anyone's ever asked me that question. I think part of the why comes back to me just wanting to be different and putting a good body of work out there. It really is as simple as that. Like, that's definitely part of it. When I am at home late at night, I can always confidently say that the body of work that I have out there on social media that people are interacting with is always a body of work that I'm going to be proud of. So that's definitely why I do it, to be creative and to create a body of work that I will be proud of personally. I think the second why has to do more with doing good in the sports community in general. I mean, I was a former athlete, still play, I guess, but I wouldn't call myself an athlete necessarily. But out there, I know athletes are trying to make it in whatever sport, whatever industry, whatever lane they want to call it. And with that, I think with content, especially in creative content particularly, you have a certain role to play in that, in elevating whatever athlete you're working with, whatever team you're working with, whatever organization you're working with. So knowing that I can do that and I'm helping a bunch of other people succeed in their own life and their own career, also definitely part of it. So the personal aspect, I'd say I can create a body of work that I'm proud of. I can, you know, hang up some nice photos in my house. That's another reason probably mixed in there. And then the second aspect of that is probably a little more broad in the sense that I get to help a lot of people along the way, and just the reactions that people give me when I capture whenever a parent comes out to me and says, that's a really good photo you took of my kid. I think they're going to cherish that moment for the rest of their lives. And there's something about that is definitely appealing to me. I've had that happen. Fortunately, I've had that happen on more than one occasion where parents approach me when I'm working. They always seem to interrupt and tap me on the shoulder. But the smile and the look they have on their faces is always something I will look forward to in my career.
So for any first years listening, what can you tell them in terms of jumpstarting their careers in content creation?
The first thing I will say is get busy and get busy now. I don't think I'd be where I am today if I didn't kickstart my career at TMU by asking the athletic department to work for them even before school started. So when I got my acceptance letter into sport media, I think in May of the summer, and literally a week later, I had a job with athletics because I emailed well in advance, and I emailed as soon as I got my acceptance letter in. I'm not saying you need to be obsessive like me and just go crazy right out of the gate. You can. It's definitely rewarding. But I will say that there's been a lot of students that I know and a lot of my friends that maybe aren't getting as busy. And then they're also kind of the same people that ask me, what is the key to success? So the key to success is getting involved, and it's getting involved as soon as you step foot in the door. If anyone's listening to this that needs any help and wants to find success, especially in the sports industry, feel free to shoot me an email at j19kim@ryerson.ca or shoot me a message on Instagram at joshkimphoto, and I'd be happy to help out. I say that a lot, but really, message me if you have any questions, and I will definitely do my best to get back to you.
Josh, thank you for your time. And for our listeners at home, you can find Josh at joshkimphoto on Instagram.
And that's it for this week. We'll see you in 2 weeks for a new episode. For On the Record, I'm Maya Abramson.
I'm Georgina Parker.
And I'm Andrew Yang.
This has been TMU Week in Review. Thank you for listening.